The Hurling Show. This is OTB Sports Radio.
Hello and welcome to the Hurling Show here on Off the Ball. Tipperary are back. What more can we say? Devastating performance in the All-Ireland final against Kilkenny on Sunday. I'm proud Tipperary man Shane Stapleton, and with me in the studio I have a couple of fine biffos. Michael Verney of the Irish Independent, how are you doing?
Not great.
No?
not great, best on last Sunday.
Tipper winning?
Pretty much.
Because Tipper back.
As smugness goes, they don't get much smugger.
What are you talking about? It's just the blue and gold, baby. Will O'Callaghan, how are you doing?
Yeah, I'm pretty much braced for your Tipperary smugness. This has been coming all season.
Get that away from me, please.
Come on now, you should be blessed to wear it. Actually, you'd wear it if it was Wicklow, wouldn't you?
Similar colours, yeah.
So tell us, lads, what did you make of Tipperary's fine hour and 10 minutes there on Sunday?
Regardless of sending off, I think they were probably going to win the game anyway. They weathered the storm after the first 20 minutes and a few things tactically that we'll talk about later. But I think they were just kind of, they were just beginning to get on top. But saying that, Kilkenny could have been a fair bit ahead after 20 minutes. They weren't, but they could have been. And like, once Tip got into gear and used to that extra man, they were just, it was devastating in fairness.
Yeah, rewatched the match last night and my thinking was the sending off determined the margin of victory as opposed to who was going to win. Tipperary, I think particularly after O'Mara's goal and that kind of spell, had just got on top of the game. As Mick said, you know, Kilkenny could have been a few points up within 20 minutes. They hit some bad wides in that kind of opening 20-minute spell where they could have extended that lead even more. But you got the feeling that Tipperary had just wrestled back control coming into half-time. The thing that's interesting is, even after Hogan's red card, Kilkenny had plenty of time to resettle at half-time. In many ways, the fact that it came 2 minutes before half-time should have made it easier to reorganise after the break. But then it was just the amount of aimless possession, which I'm sure we're going to talk about, that Kilkenny hit. Like, you had a really big performance from the Tipperary defenders, but the more I looked at it last night, and I was very impressed particularly by Ronan Maher, who came out with so much ball, but it was made easy for him by how direct and how high the ball was going into that forward line. I'd say it was a very difficult second half if you were a Kilkenny forward last weekend, because you were really living off scraps and trying to just feed TJ, and it seemed every time Tipperary had them both tightly marked and also seemed to have cover every single time because Barrett was just getting into good positions. So Kilkenny be kicking themselves that they had no real plan B in the second.
I think I've watched the game 6 times at this stage, you know, pulling up, and I've been trying to, you know, just.
I remember those days. Remember watching the 94-98 All Ireland like the week after. You'd watch
I'm pretty
it,
sure that tape was burnt
every,
out
every day at least. Yeah. It was starting to like trick and yeah.
Have you no new video to watch? No.
Not for 21 years now at this stage. I watched the 2000 All Ireland semi final quite a bit actually. It brings me back to good times. Yeah.
Funny then that like Bubbles in 2016, he said we're the champions of F in Ireland. This time, Callan dropped an F bomb as well. Goat of the week, lads. I think it's got to be unanimous.
I don't think it's unanimous. I wouldn't say it. I haven't seen it yet, but.
Okay, well, let's throw it up. It's only one man. It's Noel McGrath. Look at him bursting John Donnelly out of the way there. And that actually kind of summed up the game a little bit. I think early in the second half, Noel McGrath didn't even know John Donnelly was coming. He got absolute, like John Donnelly came in, full
just
board.
Close to the Hogan stand side, was it? Yeah, he was, the wind was fairly knocked out of his sails, all right. I thought Ronan McGrath or Ronan Maher was man of the match.
Really?
Yeah, because even before Hogan went off, he had Fenley, he had that matchup. And then when he did go off, he was just walking out with ball. I thought he was absolutely outstanding. I think he's, I think he's in the Hurler of the Year mix, I have to say. I do. I think Noel McGrath has gone into it now. If there were three Tipperary lads going for it, it would be Ronan Maher, Noel McGrath and Shane Cannon. He's probably the fourth best hurler this year.
Who would you give it to?
Yeah, I think I tweeted pretty much about an hour after the game. I think it was that Ronan Maher was probably my man of the match from both the semi-final and the final. Not that there was a whole lot between him and McGrath, both were excellent on both days. I think you're probably looking at, obviously, TJ and Callan are going to be two of the three, and I'd probably have Ronan Maher just ahead of Noel McGrath. I think there's not a huge amount to separate them, really. Both have been excellent.
When the game ended, I said Barry Heffernan, and when I watched it back those 5 other times, he was absolutely excellent, really, really brilliant. But Noel McGrath got on the ball a ridiculous amount of times, I'd say. And we'll get on to how putting Killian Buckley, who doesn't seem fully fit, onto him was the wrong idea. But that'll bring us to the goat of the year. And I know everyone's going to have a split opinion on this, but I think it has to be this man, Seamus Callanan. And we actually caught up and had a little word with the goat of the year. Ah, That man is pure class.
Oh, like apology class for the F-bomb then.
That's the goat of the year, bleating away, as he does.
I still think TJ was the goat of the year.
Really?
Despite Kilkenny even beating you.
Yeah, like he was brilliant. Isn't it, what a stat that he's gotten 1 point from play in the last three games, yet arguably their best player every
first
single day.
20 minutes the other day, he was on some amount of ball. Yeah. Jeez, he was on some amount of ball.
Doesn't it say a lot that of the 29 scoring chances that they created, he was involved in 16 of them?
Yeah.
Doesn't
yeah.
surprise me. I mean, he wins so much primary possession, he creates so much space for the guys around him as well, and was oftentimes this year, despite the fact he scored on average just under 13 points a game, he was still popping off passes to teammates and just dragging people around to make space throughout the year as well. Like, I think if Kilkenny won the All-Ireland, TJ definitely wins Hurler of the Year. I think Callanan wins it now that Tipperary have won the All-Ireland. And like, to score a goal in every championship game during the summer is pretty remarkable. And like, there were times that Callanan was quiet. Like, the first half, he didn't get on a whole lot of ball at all. And then he got four or five possessions early in the second half, two goals and 2 points come directly.
Yeah, and he should have won a penalty in the first half as well.
He should have.
You know?
I think it's proportional representation now for Hurler of the Year. So it used to be just you pick one. So, like, Tip's vote would be split if it was two Tip and one Kilkenny this year. But by all accounts, if the players are the ones that vote, so if they vote, we say Callanan one, we just say Noel McGrath, Ronan Maher two, and then TJ three, it would still work out, or vice versa, the one who gets the most amount of one to two votes would still win it.
Yeah, and you'd imagine Callanan is certainly going to be nominated, so that would be four nominations, which is an incredible return. What did you make of Sheedy's reaction? Like, the running to the crowd, the jumping in with his family, that kind of stuff. I think that is what makes the GAA. And I hate this Mr. Cool act when you win the All-Ireland that, you know, doesn't even bother you.
Taking off your headpiece and going shaking
your
hands.
Just shaking your hands. Yeah, of course, we'll stick to the process, even though we've done the whole reason that we're playing the sport. I like the fact that he got carried away, hopped into the crowd, running around like a madman. I think that's the whole reason we're doing this thing, isn't
it? That's what it's all about. And even like Paddy Mark in the last room himself in front of the Cusick at one stage and was, you know, fist pumping. So that's what it's all about. Like, if you can't enjoy that moment, like I'll never get to experience that moment. I can't imagine what it's like. It must be a phenomenal kind of feeling. And you, like, they've had it now three times, those boys. Like, you soak in every minute of it, and I'm sure they'll be doing that for the rest of this week and for the rest of the winter. Because it doesn't come around. It's grand saying, all sports people would say the one regret that they have is that most of the time that they didn't enjoy success enough. Now, Tip can't be accused of that now when they do win, but I'm sure they will enjoy it. They will enjoy it this time as well.
Brian Cody's going for the drive for five next year, 5 years without the All-Ireland.
Getting to the All-Ireland this year was a minor miracle in a sense. He was so... It was weird after. I chatted him at the hotel on Monday morning, and he was proud of the performance and their genuineness, which, genuineness is a word. I wasn't sure if it was, but
well,
it is.
Certainly he coined it anyway. Yeah.
It was strange because while they tried hard and all like that, it was a glorified challenge match for the last 20 minutes, wasn't it?
They were well out hurled, particularly from the 47 minute on, and that's what I found strange about Cody. I wonder, was that a slight defence mechanism when he was in the press conference afterwards, when he said that was an outstanding performance and he was so delighted with how they'd hurled and didn't give up till the end of the game? Like, they created nothing in that second half.
Yeah, and they needed goals and they weren't getting them at all. Like, if I just look at here, the last, including injury time, the last 14 minutes or so, created three chances, two of them were frees. You know, and I suppose you are lobbing the ball into the square. I mean, that's both finals this year. They end up lobbing the ball in at the very end, which is very young Kilkenny. Like, they're always within striking distance, keep knocking over the points.
A couple of things on that. Yeah. Actually, my mother said it to me the other day. She said,
How is your mother?
Yeah, she's great.
Lovely.
She just said, did it not remind you of the 2016 final? And I said, what do you mean? She said, like, I couldn't believe how naive Kilkenny were. She said, that day it was like 60 yards in front of Joey Holden, and the other day it was just horse and ball down the other end of the field. And even the naivety at the end of the Leinster final to be going for goals, which it's just strange. It's not Kilkenny-like, really, is it? To be doing those type of tactics and to be so predictable almost is unlike them, really.
Well, it's a few years since they've won championship silverware. Of course, there was the league last year when they bet Tip out the gate. But like, since the last, we were used to them beating Tipperary, but it's now 1,791 days since they've beaten Tipperary in the championship.
The old days between dates calculator got worked out.
I sorted it into a couple of Kilkenny lads earlier.
So never mind the 10 months between championship seasons.
The celebrations, though, I didn't actually get out to the celebrations on Sunday night because I was doing a bit of writing down at Croke Park, didn't get out till 9:30, but I caught up with Dan McCormack the following morning, so he's from Burrisaleigh, same as myself. His mother gave me grinds back in the day. He would have been popping around, popping the hurley off the wall outside. But Yeah, he was in sort of a rag enough order. You can see him on the screen there. I texted him and I said, Noel McGrath is after doing you on the Sunday game. You're going to have to get him back. So for anyone who didn't see it, Noel McGrath was talking about Dan and said, there's no point giving him the ball. He wouldn't know what to do with it.
Noel was in great form.
And he absolutely sold it into Dan. And I said to Dan, you need to come back hard on him here.
Moses is Dan.
And, you know, I mean, he'd gotten home late, you know. There's no doubt about it. It was probably 12 or 1 o'clock when I was messaging him. And I said, what you need to say to Noel is congrats on your first joke at the age of 29 or something like that. But he said, you know what, I can't do it. I have to take me baiting. There's no point coming out hard. But he said, come up and we'll do the interview in the hotel room. So I went up to the hotel room in the Hilton in Ball's Bridge there. And I went in, and first of all, his girlfriend answered the door, Edwina. She thought that it was going to be room service with a couple of bottles of beer. So I was a massive letdown. I went in then, and my cousin was in there, who's great friends with him, Father Vinny, who some people might remember. We did a documentary with last year, The Hurling Priest. So then eventually got him to do it. Sure, he did the interview in his jocks anyway, but you can only see his... We had to stop it a couple of times because he was so addled. But he actually did a very passable interview, which you can see on my Twitter. But
there's a great one about a journalist who I won't name, whose byline picture in the paper that he used to work for, he basically had no clothes on, I think, at the time. It was just a headshot.
Who was it?
I cannot say.
Of course you can.
But all the hacks will know.
To be honest, Shane, I was surprised at how fresh they were, because I was sent down pretty early in the morning to the team hotel, and I was worried when I arrived in the Burlington at 7 a.m. and the lobby was entirely empty, bar for one Tipperary supporter who just left the party. And just from a few texts that were going around, the lads had gone to bed, I think, around 20 past 6. Yeah. So put it to Vernie's point about the amount of celebrating they did. There was no non-drinking like maybe with some of the Limerick players the year before. These guys went pretty hard at it on Sunday night.
Well, there's no point in staying looking at it, is it?
Mm. No.
There's no point at all.
Here's one for you. As soft all Ireland's go, where does that rank?
Why would you call it soft?
Well, you were hammered in a Munster final, with due respect to other counties involved, beat Laois in a quarter final, and beat, you would have fancied yourselves at the start of the year to beat Wexford in the semi-final as well.
Well, I did get a tweet about this, which I think is, there it is up on the screen. Jason Clifford. Shane, curious, has anyone inquired yet where this ranks on your soft All-Ireland list? Hammered in Munster final, then beat Laois, Wexford, and what people described as the poorest Kilkenny of the Cody era. What do you think? Is it up there with Clare in 2013?
Lovely.
I had a fair response for Jason as well. I'm still waiting for him to come back, and I said beat Cork, who were Munster champions at the time, Clare, Waterford, Limerick, albeit a shadow side, fair enough, Laois, Wexford, who had just been crowned Leinster champions, and Kilkenny, who beat Limerick and Cork on the way, so lost heavily to Limerick. So you tell me if it's soft, and any comparisons with Clare are hilarious, because the idea is that Clare never backed it up. So, Vernie, where do we go from there?
No, to be fair, the former start of the championship was outrageous, and it just took a little bit of a dip, but we'd say the last 40, 45 minutes the other day was back at the high end of where they started the championship, in fairness. We all know that they could do that, but it was whether they actually would go and do it, and they did, in fairness.
It took 21 minutes to get a shot from play from a forward.
Yeah.
Do you know, I mean, Michael Breen was quiet for a nice bit of the match, but at the start he made a couple of important interventions, knocking over a lovely point from the 45, kind of arcing away from goals, and then catching a great crossfield ball. Now, Seamus Kennedy hit it wide, but there was a couple of important moments early on.
There's a point there where I think Tipper 8-3 down, and Brendan Matter just charges forward and kind of just takes the bull by the horns. It was 8-3 or 8-4 down. Just charges forward, kind of realised maybe that something had to happen, flicked the ball over someone and won a free.
Yeah,
just
to kind of,
just to kind of settle them a little.
Yeah, and there was no need for that foul at all. That was to make it 8 points to 5 when Ford knocked over the free. There was no need to do it. And it was one of many tackles throughout the game where the hurley came a little bit high. It kind of flicked Brendan around the neck, slash face guard area. And I know Kilkenny people have been going on about Barrett flicking off Hogan's head. Now, in the hurling world, those sort of flicks are never going to be a red card, because I think a hurley just with a single arm flicking in, yeah, it's dangerous, and there's times when it definitely is red. But in general, a lot of time, these are glancing things in the helmet more than deals with it.
It's not a strike. To me, it's not a strike. It's a flick. Like, he's not gone and lashed across him like that. It's a flick to try and get the ball. Now, albeit he didn't get the ball, but to me, that's a flick. If you're pulling red cards for something like that, like, it's every time. Like, how many times in a game does the hurl just even slap off the face guard? It's small, but just because the ball is in around there. As Tommy Walsh always says about Christy Ring as well, like, Ring always said, pull where you think the ball ball is, or flick where you think the ball is. So like if you're like if every time you make a little bit of contact up around here, it's going to be a red. We're going to end up with 12 or 11 aside. Like,
yeah, look, I think in a split second like that, hurls are going to glance in. They're going to hit off people as they're going around. Like, I thought would have been fairly harsh if that had actually been a red card for Barrett on Hogan.
Oh,
even
yeah.
though it does draw blood, I think there's no intention to strike and there's no real kind of effort to extend that into a strike either. To me, that's an attempt to try and flick the ball.
Now, I do have an issue with Tipperary's cynical fouling at the start was outrageous. Like,
and
I thought they got away with absolute murder. I looked back at it again this morning, particularly in the first half. Pretty cynical fouls from John McGrath before he got that outrageous JJ-like hook on Wally Walsh, which was outrageous for the goal chance. Barry Heffernan, Brendan Maher, Cottle Barrett and Seamus Kennedy, all but Barrett wasn't cynical, shall we say, but was dangerous. Like, at least two or three of them should have been yellows. And like, maybe Richie Hogan's red seemed a bit more of a kind of an aberration then in relation to what had come before it, if you know what I mean. I definitely thought there should have been a few yellows.
Kind of set a tone because of that.
Possibly. And like, just if the game had been tighter, definitely Seamus Kennedy should have been on a yellow, and probably Barry Heffernan as well. And if the game goes down the clutch and those boys give away a bad free or a heavy tackle and then they're only getting a yellow, that's when they're only on a yellow then, when they should have been on a yellow before that. That's
you
when
think it was one-way traffic in that sense?
In the first half, definitely, yeah. I thought it was very strange. Like, Kilkenny had half chances for goals. Those four chances out of the five tip defenders I mentioned there were half chances for goals, and they were basically pull down, and I don't, the black card in hurling is not something I even would entertain, but I think there has to be yellow cards for something as kind of blatant as those type of tackles.
We're going to come to the tactics board now, and you can tell us what Tipperary got right. Let's take down this, we'll mind this jersey, you can do whatever you want with that. Mind this jersey nicely there, we'll leave that there. Best in the land at the moment. Go ahead there.
Yeah, just looking at Tip.
This is what Tip got right now.
Yeah, it was interesting, to be honest with you. Like, everyone will look at the Hogan sending off. But at the start, Brian Hogan into the Tipperary goals was hitting.
He nearly put Tip in blue.
Yeah, he put Tip in blue, and he hit a couple of sharp puckouts to Barry Heffernan, and he hit a couple to Cottle Barrett, but mainly to Heffernan. And they weren't getting any joy from it. Kilkenny were kind of pressing up quite high on the receiver. And interesting, and I wouldn't have seen it, and you wouldn't see it on telly, but in the 21st minute, Barry Heffernan shouts back in at Brian Hogan. He's looking to give him a short run, and he shouts back in at Brian Hogan to tell him no more sharp puckouts.
Now, he was left corner back for these.
Left corner back over here. So he tells him no more sharp puckouts. So he starts going long, and they start getting a bit more joy. Well, about 2 minutes later, then the tip management team have a bit of a conflab here, and they make basically a switch that kind of changes the game in essence as well. So Paddy goes from here to here to pick up Walter Walsh, who was getting a bit of joy out of Seamus Kennedy.
And Kennedy goes on Donnelly.
Yeah, and Donnelly was the best Kilkenny player now. And still
for 40 minutes.
Yeah, for 40 minutes until he died out a bit. But 2 minutes after this conflab, Paddy catches the high ball over Wally that sets up the goal, which in essence kind of turned the tide a small bit as well. So it just showed you, like, Tip were in the game, but the kind of new management knew that something needed to change. So this was one thing that they changed, and it was unbelievably effective. Then, like, that was their tactics before the red card. After the red card, obviously, you had Barrett slipping back in here, and was basically, like, I think Brendan Cummins said at half-time, Tip basically talked about what Wexford did wrong with the extra man.
Yeah, so Hogan's gone there, we'll say Barrett is in here.
Pretty much, yeah. And while Kilkenny totally shot themselves in the foot and were the authors of their own downfall with the ball that they were driving in, Barrett was, I think, the right selection to be free, just because he's so mobile and so confident on the ball. So, like, there was one awful instance where Killian Buckley hit a ball straight to him, and he was just on the ball an awful lot, and he was the perfect man because he was able to charge out. Plus, he allowed these two boys, Adrian Mullen, who I put up a story on Sunday morning that he'd been hospitalised, and he clearly wasn't right. He was under awful pressure.
I mean, this is definitely worth talking about, because Brian Cody said afterwards that he had a bit of a stomach bug, there was nothing wrong with him, really. But if you're that player, there's a fair chance you haven't your phone turned off from 9 in the morning onwards. So is his phone getting inundated with messages saying, are you all right, what's the story? And or is he just hearing about it from a million different directions? Never mind the fact that he's 19, never mind the fact he's playing his first All-Ireland final, it's up against Tipperary. do you know, there's a million, there's an awful lot going on there.
Those close to him would have known the situation.
And he got hit really hard three times.
Yeah, one particularly bad.
One by the goalie, one by Heffernan, one by someone else who I can't remember. Was it Cathal Barrett possibly? Just was a scramble.
Yeah.
So he got really hard, and you could see they didn't really get a whole pile out of him. Now he's a supreme talent, so they will down the.
You could clearly see that he wasn't right at all.
What some of the Kilkenny lads were saying in the press box ahead of the game as well, because we were trying to find out how bad he is, and then we see the team bus coming in on the screen, and you see he's getting off the bus. You know he's going to play, but apparently he'd been checked out, and there was even reports that he'd been checked out for appendicitis early in the week because he had pains. He got a bit of a drip at times, and he was okay. I think 2 days before the game came around, but that's quite a bit of your preparation on the week of a game, which is taken up by not knowing if you're going to be 100% right as well. And from the start of the game, he didn't look right.
We have a look. Do you have anything more to say?
Just that they were very, very clever. And the second goal, when they had the free man, of all the teams to have a free man, Tipperary are probably the best equipped team.
Because
they're proper ball players. Like it's all heads up hurling every time they got the ball. So every time Barra got the ball, it was heads up. It was usually a 30-yard pass. It was the opposite of Kilkenny. They weren't driving ball down here aimlessly or anything like that. And I think the second goal kind of highlighted it quite well.
Heffernan was just over here.
So there's a bit of traffic over here. So Noel McGrath picks up a ball here. Now, with 14 men, you can put a lot of pressure on the initial tackle. You put all your energy into the initial tackle. If the initial tackle is broken, you're in trouble. So Noel McGrath is over here, and he's been pushed to the sideline, and he actually throws a reverse hand pass kind of just behind him.
Yeah.
And it ends up with Brendan Matter, who feeds it out to Barry Heffernan here, who is kind of one-on-one with TJ, throws him a sidestep, TJ's kind of caught, works in here, and it's actually nuts like how much space he has. It's probably between the 265s he has. Puts a diagonal ball in here. Hugh Lawler tries to play in front of Seamus Callanan, just maybe misses the ball. Callanan ends up here. The goal is interesting though, because Joey Holden leaves Bubbles to try and come in here. So Callanan is here. He leaves Bubbles to cut off that, I suppose, Seamus Callanan turning him and going for goal.
Kind of going there.
Yeah, Bubbles ends up in here. And Paul Murphy, who is running back, checks back to see where John McGrath is, and rather than dropping in, goes back out on John McGrath. And unlike the second goal, there's no Pádraic Walsh coming back, or there's no Paddy Deegan or Conor Fogarty coming back. So, amazingly, in an All-Ireland final, Bubbles is standing on the 13-yard line by himself.
He's more or less on the 6-yard box.
Yeah. Yeah.
I think those strange reactions from a lot of players. I think Joey Holden left his man too early. I wonder if he could go back again, would Owen Murphy have sprung out a little bit quicker on Bubbles? And I think this thing, because I'll come back to it on another goal, Pádraic Walsh, for the first goal for Niall O'Mara as well, when he could have possibly been charging back in to cover that D, which a number six probably should. Mm. He was looking back to see where John McGrath was. John McGrath played centre forward for most of the game. Mm.
I think it's the fact that Tipperary were playing in, like, they used the space incredibly well in the second half once it opened up, and once Kilkenny started to have to push up a bit on them as well, which we kind of saw in both goals. I kind of wonder for the Bubbles goal as well, if they had expected that Callanan was just going to fire.
Yeah.
I think there was, to a certain extent, they thought, let's cut down the angle. If he's going to cut inside.
Even so, Joey Holden shouldn't have gone at that point, I felt.
Yeah. If he was gone, it has to be a kind of concertina effect where the next man comes across. It has to happen really quickly. But he probably did leave his man fairly quickly. But the fact that Paul Murphy didn't come back here just left Bubbles by himself, basically. And who do you want in Hoshin's space? You wouldn't want a better man like his clinical finisher as he is. Mm.
Then just to look at Tipperary and Kilkenny and what they got wrong. If we just go back into the sort of formations that were there at the start of the game. Right, so what I have it first of all is picking two unnatural midfielders, or two lads that aren't kind of settled midfielders. So Killian Buckley, I think we all feel he wasn't right. And from the get-go, I'd say within the first 5 minutes, Noel McGrath had more possessions than he would have in the entire game. And that situation stayed like that for probably, it was 45 minutes or so before he was taken out. I think the selection of Conor Brown on Michael Breen didn't make a whole pile of sense. In my opinion, what must have happened is, right, Michael Breen is a machine who can run through the centre time after time. We need someone who can physically keep with him. Conor Brown kind of fits that mould. He's a very athletic player. But what had worked in the All-Ireland semi-final, especially, like, the first 20 minutes were very similar to the semi-final against Limerick. Kilkenny were all over Tipperary as they had been, and as Cian Lynch had found in the semi-final, surely Noel McGrath is the guy you need to shut down.
Who is going to hurt you more? Like?
And after 20 or 25 minutes, you got to, you know, I'm a bit like looking at Joey Holden marking Callanan in 2016 when he was trying to the Wolves. You have to think, right, I need to make a switch here. So I think Brian Cody got that badly wrong. Another thing I think he got wrong is I don't know if Padraig Walsh should be playing centre-back. I'm not sure, because the amount of times, and putting John McGrath, who played most of the game centre-forward, putting him there was the perfect little ruse for Liam Sheedy, because if you leave him there, not only will he playmake, because he's got the Noel's ability to playmake, but he can score from anywhere. He will run at you. He's not blessed with pace, but he will run at you. And the amount of times that Padraig Walsh was drawn out to no man's land, just out even beyond here, and Tipperary had oceans to work with. And that's two finals in a row where there's been nothing but space in front of that Tipperary full forward line.
It was a weird one as well. Like, we kind of talked last week, Brian Hogan didn't put the ball down the middle.
Yeah.
In fairness, like, he didn't, and he wasn't going to make it.
Didn't make a hero out of
him. No, he wasn't going to make an all-star out of him, no.
And their half-back, the Kilkenny half-back line, are three guys who are all 6 foot at best. This isn't the day of, and obviously Tommy Walsh isn't massive, but he was incredible in the air, JJ incredible in the air, and then Brian Hogan massive as well. Killian Buckley, when he was in his best position, that was wing back. Padraig Walsh, best position, has been wing back. Mm. Another thing, during the league, Padraig Walsh scored 4 points off Noel McGrath in Thurles. So when this isn't working, and you're seeing that Noel McGrath is destroying your team, would you not think, well, do you know what Noel McGrath mightn't like here is running after Padraig Walsh. The one time Padraig Walsh was in the opposition half up here, the right wing forward at the Hogan's stand side, he knocked one over the bar. But the funny thing is, he was still centre back. He was dragged so far out of position, he was up at right wing forward. And that'll just tell you how discombobulated that whole Kilkenny team.
Funny, like, people often talk about hammering the hammer. With someone like Padraig Walsh, I just think you stay away from the hammer. Like, you know, you can work around him. And by doing that, he was kind of, as you say, caught in no man's land, moving around, but not really in the game.
But he didn't know whether to come or go. Yeah. He was a little bit like Paul Murphy for the Kerry footballers against Tyrone. He was just stuck in no man's land. Like when Niall O'Mara came through for the goal, Padraig Walsh kind of looked for a second, looked behind him, stopped. And it meant that, like, I'm not sure if he would have got back for Niall O'Mara.
On the O'Mara goal, I can't believe how much space he actually found himself in after the first jink.
Yeah.
Like, I was sure there was going to be cover coming back around to actually stop him.
You feel sorry for Conor Fogarty in that situation. We've all had our back turned to the player who's nice at, like, jinking and stuff like that.
I tell you what, if that was down the other end, I can guarantee it, he would have been taken down.
Yeah. I think the puck outs for Kilkenny as well, it was just much like the ball they were playing during playoffs. Let's put a bit of snow on this. Let's see how much more snow we can put on it. Just constantly, you know, and we'll take the red card player out of the situation. It was just long ball after long ball, and you know the Kilkenny forwards will draw out the field. Brendan did a good job on TJ Reid insofar as you can do a good job on him. But it was just the amount of time, like Paddy Deegan and Conor Fogarty and Killian Buckley, the amount of times they just hit the ball straight to the spare man. Kilkenny forwards are really good when they run at you. Nobody likes Wally Walsh turning, running straight at you. Nobody enjoys TJ Reid doing it. Why not, and even when they brought Colin Fenley out, why not hit the ball low and run at a player? Like Billy Ryan once or twice ran at Padraig Maher, he wasn't able to keep into it. Because
like
he's
I was
so
sitting
fast.
Beside Tommy Walsh, that's exactly what he was thinking. There was only about maybe two or three times in the second half where the ball was actually hit in. I think it was when Fenley had dragged out a bit over towards the sideline, there was low ball put in towards him.
Yeah.
And Tommy kept on screaming, play ball like that, because he was so frustrated about the amount of high ball that was going in, which I wouldn't even call 50-50 because the auxiliary defender is there.
Yeah.
Like at best, a Kilkenny man probably has to beat one to two defenders in order to get any kind of clean possession.
A minute after Richie Hogan was sent off, Paddy Deegan sent a skyrocket in there. And you would have imagined that he would have got a rollicking and they would have got a bit of a rollicking at half-time, and you would have seen the exact opposite happen in the second half. And just you were talking about Owen Murphy. Owen Murphy has way too much range and can hit anyone from 100 yards into their mouth. I don't understand why that wasn't utilised, or whether the tactic was, we need goals, we're going to need goals, we're going to have to bombard ball down. It just didn't work. You know yourself, if you have a good sweeper and you have good defenders, the good defender can literally go bald-headed at the ball because he knows there's someone there behind it. Yeah. And it's so much easier to defend in that situation. You see how Wofford were able to do it, you see how Wexford were able to do it. So it was just strange on Kilkenny's part. The game plan that they've been working on for the last 2 years, where they've changed, where it's been hand passing off the shoulder, where it's been short 20-yard stick passing, where Paul Murphy isn't allowed to strike the ball 100 yards down the field anymore, that just basically was ripped up in the second half the other day. It was weird.
Paul did do that, quite a few times. And again, I think it comes down to team selections. A nice bit of it. Are Kilkenny shy a player or two, or does beating Limerick mean this team is good enough to win an All-Ireland and could do so yet next year?
Maybe not good enough to win an All-Ireland. They're obviously good enough on their day to beat kind of any of the contenders if they hurl like they did against Limerick, particularly in the first half of that game. But you'd have to look at it. Obviously, they've found a couple of players this year. Like Hugh Lawler's been a find for their defence, and like Adrian Mullen has been a total star and probably nailed on for Young Hurler of the Year. Mm. But like things would be a lot easier if they had a starting six, which then they could fit their half back line together. They definitely, I think, need to find someone around midfield.
Do you need a six, actually? Because Tip have now just gone with matchups. And I mean, that's something that I've been quite critical of Tip over the years, that they don't just go horses for courses. And that's a term I heard from one or two players even afterwards, after the final, that that's what we've been doing game on game. If Tip were to play Limerick tomorrow, like, you know, Kilkenny are going to go long ball all day, or certainly they did in that game. Limerick kind of work the ball out until they can pin it in, and they've got a lot of fast, jinky forwards. I'm not sure that Tip would pick that exact starting lineup.
That's one thing Tip have done well. Like, I was chatting to Ronan Mara on Monday, and he kind of made the point when I was chatting to him that they've been very good at dealing with injuries and adversity within their defence as well. That they've just been able to make a fluid system and switch guys around. And he was saying some of the lads that play in that defence are comfortable to play in multiple positions in the defence as well, which we give an awful lot of credit to Tipperary's forwards. But the way, particularly as the year went on, especially after that Limerick defeat where we had lots of question marks over Tipperary, even just as a defensive unit in general, that they were able to sort things out by the end of the year and look at how well they were set up for that All-Ireland final.
There's we have a good, apparently a good anti-Kilkenny tweet that Kieran Cunningham put out there. Now, I don't really stand for anti-Kilkenny stuff, but let's hear. There's something of Tyrone 95 and Mayo 96 to Kilkenny over the past few days. Let it go. It's over. I think probably a lot of that is to do with the red card to Richie Hogan, and obviously Henry Shefflin and Jackie Tyrrell went in hard in his defence, and Richie came out on the show the other day with Joe Malloy, and he sort of said it was never a red card. He said his technique was absolutely right. It was up until he missed the man, and then, you know, we've all done it. You stretch back the arm because you've missed with the initial contact and you're trying to get something on it. I do think it's unfortunate, but it's a red card all day.
Yeah, a similar incident actually happened in the 10th minute when I looked back at it this morning. Yeah. Barrett had a ball out with the sideline, and it wasn't as obvious or anything like that, but Richie did go in to try and just give him a... It wasn't nearly as obvious as sending off. Went in to try and give him a shoulder, and Barrett slipped him again. So there was probably a bit of frustration, and fair play to Richie, I have to say. The easiest thing to do would be to knock him out and say anything. I think for his own self... probably parking that incident, talking about it straight away, that's probably the best way to get over it. Listen, there's a couple of things. Consistency is the big issue. Is that, like, Richie Hogan was turned upside down against Cork with that Bill Cooper tackle. Like, he was nearly decapitated. Like,
if
it was,
he hadn't got back up that quickly, that probably would have been
wrong. It would have been. And that's wrong. Like, it shouldn't really matter how Richie Hogan reacted to it. He could have stayed down if he wanted to. He was probably thinking to himself, I'm hurling well, I'm going to get up and stay going here or whatever. Like, that shouldn't matter. The fact that it was the same referee, you know, it's gained quite a lot of traction online how that was and a red, and this is a red. With the new rules that were introduced, not introduced, with the new directive that was introduced about head-high tackles and how strong they were going to come down on, this is always going to happen. It's just the consistency issue. Like, Killian Buckley probably should have been sent off in the semi-final in that case for the tackle on Will O'Donoghue. There was another tackle as well. I can't remember, in one of the other big games as well. That's what you want to see. If one gets sent off, then all get sent off for doing it. Not one big huge one in an All-Ireland final.
On the line now, we have Dickie Murphy, who was an All-Ireland final referee on four occasions. He's the Hawkeye official. Now, the reason why I have him on, of course, is to talk about the Hawkeye. But Dickie, first of all, how are you doing?
Not too bad, Shane. Not too bad.
Good, very good. Since we have you on the line and you have reffed four All-Ireland finals, can I just ask you, what did you make of that red card decision? Do you think James Owens was correct, your own county man?
Yeah, I think it was a correct decision last Sunday. I think we've spoken a lot about it. You know, it's been a lot spoken about in the last few days. But yeah, I think it was a red card. I think Richie, very good hurler, but I think it was, I think he was just off with his tackle and it was head high. And I think James took his time to make the decision, and I think it was a correct decision.
Do you think there's an issue with consistency in the application of this rule?
I suppose, you know, we talk about refereeing, consistency is a big thing in refereeing, you know, at all sports, you know, and what from a referee's point of view, you want to get the big decisions correct on any day, whether it's an All-Ireland final or a county final, you know, and I just think that last Sunday, James got it correct.
Yeah, do you think people appreciate how tough it is to referee an incident like that? I mean, in your own situation, you've ref those four finals, as I said, you're sprinting around the field trying to keep up a play. Something like that happens and it's such a split-second incident. How tough is it for a referee?
Actually, look at you know, as a referee, the place you want to end up as an inter-county referee is refereeing the All-Ireland final. You want it, you know, to be as easy as you can, but that doesn't happen. You got to make decisions, you got to make big calls, and that's why you're there. And, you know, while a lot of people think he was right, a lot of people think he was wrong, but like, he has got to make that decision. You got a split decision. You live and die by those decisions, and you know, that's what you have to do. It's not, as I said, it's not an easy job. If it was easy, the whole world would be at it, but it's not. And, you know, you've got to make that decision. And, you know, in James' own mind, that was his call. That was his, he thought, he believed he was right, and that's where you got to make that call.
Dickie, what's the fallout from making a decision like for a referee the days after, the weeks after, even in your own everyday life? Is there much of a fallout to it? People coming up to you, saying it to you, commenting and different things like that?
Actually, of course there is. You know, like, my job, I'm a postman. Look, you know, I wasn't working this week. I'm off for a few days, holidays. But I can bet you, on Monday, it definitely would be the talk everywhere you go. And I wasn't refereeing the match, you know. So I can imagine back when, 20 years ago, when I refereed finals, you know, people would be talking. Every decision goes, people will dissect it and talk about it. And, you know, look, that's part of it too, you know. You just can't go into a box and hide away from everything. You got out and face the public as well. And as I said, James was, you know, there's no doubt about James, I was talking to him on Sunday evening in Croke Park. You know, he was happy enough with that decision. And, you know, that's what you got to be. You know, you got to live and die, as I said, live and die by those decisions.
Dickie, is there ever a case as well where maybe you opt not to make a decision? Like, there were some people saying at the weekend that could have been allowed to go. Would you ever feel guilty after a game that maybe you, for some reason, you hesitated and didn't make a decision you felt you had to make?
Oh, she's not as bad as, you know, you make a decision, you know, you give, you know, for instance, that he gave no card last Sunday, or he only gave a yellow card, and you go home that evening and you watch the Sunday game or the next day in the papers where, you know, they have a right cut at you for you didn't send them, not only not an All-Ireland final, but any game, you know, especially when it's on TV. There's so many TV camera angles now, you know, that everyone would say that, you know, you got it wrong, you should have put them off, but you didn't. Why didn't you put them off? And in refereeing terms, you know, we'll have a review of the championship at the end of the season. And, you know, if he hadn't have put him off, you know, he would have come in for a bit of criticism there as well, because, you know, if it was a red card that he missed, you know, and it goes back to consistency. And really, that's what we all try to do, that every referee, every day they go out, that they will give red cards for high head tackles. You know, that's what consistency, and that's what you're hoping to do.
Dickie, we'll come to the Hawkeye in a second. Just one final question, because Conor O'Neill on Twitter, he's a TIP fan from Monaghan. He says, what do you think of Cody's comments about Owens taking his time over the decision? Do we want refs taking their time or making quick decisions and maybe getting it wrong?
I know, I think, look, at James took his time. You know, Johnny Murphy, who was linesman, he spoke to him as well, took his time. You know, and look, at James seemed to be happy enough with that. You know, he just took his time. He didn't make that a rash decision. Whether, you know, probably if he had said a red card straight away, people would be complaining, why didn't he go to the linesman? You know, so, you know, he'd done it really. The linesman was in a position as well on the line. He spoke to him, took his time. He only took a few extra seconds probably. And made his decision.
So, and just one final question then about refereeing an All-Ireland final. When you're coming into a game, and if you look at what's happening with David Goff at the moment, even on the football side of things, and all the discussion about how maybe he shouldn't be a ref because he's involved in coming to Munskull and Dublin from the Kerry side of things, and I'm sure, like David himself, this is his dream since he became a referee. Is it very hard having all that sort of conversation around you? And, like, for example, if you've big name managers, like Gerlach Nam would have been Clare manager in 97 when you were going to ref that All-Ireland final against Tiff. Is that tough, and what do you make from David's point of view there?
I know. Look, at David Goff is one of the top referees in the country. You know, he's appointed to the final last week, and, you know, David will keep his head down. You know, if I was him, I wouldn't be reading what people are saying in the press or anything like that. Now, you know, you get his head together for the few weeks coming up to the final, and I think, you know, the one thing about, you know, we got to be fit referees at the top level, had to be got, but mentally it had to be very strong. And of course, people are going to say things before the match, during the match, and after the match. And look, that's part of the game now. You know, when I was refereeing, it wasn't as much social media as it is now. So you got to get on with it. And, you know, David is, you know, one of the top football referees in the country. And, you know, I think it just blew off him, really.
Yeah, so the reason we have you on is because you are the Hawkeye Review official and you're speaking of social media. I mean, it exploded on Sunday when Brian Hogan caught a ball over the crossbar from John Donnelly and it went back to the Hawkeye and it was deemed a score, much like in the semi-final with the Lee Chin incident. Tipperary had actually scored a goal at the other end, went back and it was given as a point. Can you explain how Hawkeye works? Because I think for a lot of people out there, maybe through a lack of information, we're thinking when, like, the ball has changed every 3 or 4 minutes, we'll say, or a couple of plays. So there can't be a chip in every single ball to determine exactly if the full radius of the ball has gone over. Is the hand being slightly detected? Is a bit of boat and then a certain width, and it's kind of guessing that, well, the ball is over. Like, how does it work?
Well, again, I'm the review official, so when we're in the box, I'm the review official speaking. Like, I'm in contact with the referee and the four umpires. We have two technicians from Hawkeye. They look at the graphics. There's no chip in any of the balls, really. It's all, I think there's 8 or 9 cameras in Croke Park, situated all, and that make the decision. It's a virtual, you know, they have virtual lines. You know, the post is 13 metres, and then the virtual line is 13 metres up higher, which brings it up to 26 metres for the goalpost, which is up very, very high. It reads the ball, or they read whether the ball goes over the bar. If it hits the virtual line, as you can see, it's always kneel if it hits the virtual line. For instance, last Sunday, I think it was 325, was it
to 20
points. So we would have every ball that goes either over the bar or wide. We check it every time. So if it's within, I think it's 3 meters of the post. From, you know, if it's 4 meters, it's gone. You know, it doesn't cover that at all. But from 3 meters in, we can check the ball with the flight of it. So every decision, the Hawkeye official says to me, it's wide or a point. I look down. I look at. I make sure that the umpire is going with the right decision. So if the Hawkeye official said it's a point. I look at the umpire signal as a point, so everything is okay. But when he says to me it's a point and the umpire signals the right, well, then I have to call the referee straight away. There's been a mistake made. So in that sense, it's simple enough. The one last Sunday with Brian Hogan, and probably in the All-Ireland semi-final, which I wasn't working because Wexford were playing, so we don't do a review official if your own county are playing. You know, the ball came in, and Brian Hogan caught it. Last Sunday was the first time that James Owens was kind of linked up to RT and Sky commentators that could hear what he was saying. So James said to me, are you checking it? And I said, we are. Marty Marcy, I think if you're listening on RT, he said that Hawkeye are checking it now. So the Hawkeye official, he checked it once, he checked it twice, and then he said to me, it's a point. So I called James straight away, and James stopped play, and the ball was deemed over the bar. I think that probably the thing where it is, when it comes up on the screen, probably it looked like that the ball went way past the crossbar. But I think a spokesman for Hawkeye spoke on Tuesday, said that once the red changed to white, and it just changed white just over the crossbar, that deemed a point, that it was a point.
Is it able to differentiate between the hand and the ball? Because, and like, is it a case that it's like, let's say, for example, the ball is like 5 inches in diameter. Is it a case that once 5 inches of something passes through, that it kind of calculates that the ball must be over? Like, can it separate from the hand, differentiate?
Well, in fairness, I presume it does. Yeah. I know this is, I'm mine from the, like, as I said, I was on the review official just dealing with the referee. But I presume, because in fairness, whether it's, you know, the VAR is Hawkeye, really, it's Hawkeye's in the soccer in England. Yeah. They do the tennis, so they do it all. So I presume, you know, I wouldn't be at this game
yeah.
unless they got it right, you know.
Do you see any graphic different than the one that we see? You know, the one you spoke about where it's like it's tracking the graph of the ball where it's going from red to white. Do you see any other sort of display that
again, I don't see the graphic.
Yeah.
The hockey official is doing the graphic. What I'm trying to do is keep my eye on the umpires to make sure that they're making the right signal. And also, I forgot to say that if the umpire is not quite sure, he comes up to us for us to make that decision for him. You know, if he's not sure whether the ball is a point or wide, he makes the box signal and comes up to, you know, I'm in contact with the umpires and the linesman or the referee and the four umpires. So if they're not sure of a ball or it's gone too high or they'll come up to us, so we'll make that decision. But it's the hockey official, he's looking at the graphics, that's his decision. And he kind of tells me, and I relay it back to, or the big screen, in fairness, will relay it back to the referee on the day.
And do you get a sense that everyone is 100% satisfied that this technology is working right, that in both of those occasions there were points? Because we could have a final sometime soon whereby a ball is caught out over a crossbar and that could be the winning of the game or a draw.
Oh, well, you know, you only go back to a few years ago, back when, you know, when Bubbles took the last free, and it was, you know, people would say that back in the, and the Davin stand, it was, half the people thought it was a point, especially the Tipperary people.
Yeah.
People said, and in fairness, it went by Hawkeye. It decided the All-Ireland final. It was a draw. Kenny went and won the replay, I think, didn't they?
Yeah, they did.
And so, you know, I think a few people have spoken this week that we need more technology in the game. I think we have it at the moment, and I think that it's there, and I think we should accept it, really.
Brilliant stuff, Dickie. Thanks very much for joining us. You've been very good with your time.
No, it's no problem, Shane. Talk to you. Bye bye.
Okay, lads. So
we probably need to talk to one of the guys who does Hawkeye then.
Yeah.
To find out how
they
work.
Still interesting to find out how it works from Dickie's point of view.
Mm.
And of course, he has so much experience, probably the right man to have in there.
So Brian Hogan is so insistent that it's his hand that's triggering it off. And what seems interesting is it's a camera view and a graphic created by the cameras that seems to determine it. I kind of wondered where maybe there was a sensor going across the line of the crossbar, possibly, because that's what Brian Hogan was suspecting, that maybe his hand was knocking off a sensor.
Mm.
But if it's a camera angle, that could be very deceptive if a ball is safely inside the palm of the hand, and if you've got a particularly big paw.
This is going to happen again and again, isn't it, realistically?
Well, Brian Hogan, if he's done it twice in two games at Croke Park, and what about the grounds where there isn't Hawkeye?
Yeah, you very know, true, yeah. It won't be given in those grounds, because you couldn't have got that with your eye the other day.
No. I've seen about five different stills, and it's very difficult to know. Like, none of them seem conclusive to me that the entire ball has gone over the crossbar, but you have to be very mindful that obviously it's based on that second when the photo has gone off.
And even if you do have, like, the right camera angle where it's straight in line with the two posts perfectly, you know, even scientifically done, you could have a situation where the ball is in the hand, the fingers are obscuring the view, you're never 100% sure.
Yeah. Speaking of cameras, I have to say, I think it's absolutely laughable that in the Croke Park, in the big screen, that they don't show the controversial incidents again, so they didn't show the Richie Hogan shoulder again.
I think that added to the annoyance of many of the supporters after the hit as well, because they didn't actually get to see it. So those in the lower Hogan, particularly just in front of where the incident went, were baying for blood. Yeah. Well, I think if they had seen the replay.
And yet, they panned the pictures of Richie Hogan sitting up with the subs after being sent off like several times,
which is harsh on him.
Where's the justice
humanity
in that? Humanity is another one. I think that's unbelievable. It was Shane McEntee from Meath, the Meath footballer, to tweet about that. Like, that's bizarre. Like, that's madness.
It's harsh. Lads, quick word on we're running out of time. Michal Donoghue's gone. What do we make of that? I think his legacy is he took a team that had been really erratic, that had flopped in an All Ireland final in 2015. He got them to a semi final in 2016. He won a clean sweep in 2017, ended a massive famine, got back to the final the following year, and then obviously didn't go great this year. But I think overall it has to be seen as a big success, with the qualification that in the last year or so they went too much long ball, and I think they kind of might have left the second All-Ireland behind him.
Yeah, I commented in here after Galway were knocked out. I said that if he does go back, and I did expect him to go back, and he, by all accounts he was going back, that they'd have a fair rebuilding job, and that they, not rebuilding, but that he was going to have to inject new faces, and going into his fifth year, it would be starting again almost in his fifth year to some extent. And I questioned whether he would or not. But I did think he would, and by all accounts he told the county board he would. I don't know what's happened in the meantime. I know there's a lot of people not happy about it, particularly a lot of players are not happy about it, yeah. With regards to county board and different things like that. So I'm not sure. He leaves a fair legacy, yeah, in fairness. Four years, All-Ireland semi-final, beaten a pint by the eventual All-Ireland champions, All-Ireland finalists, and even this year they were knocked out, but they didn't limp out.
No.
Do you know what I mean?
It was a crazy situation, yeah. Where the only set of results that would knock them out did.
It's an interesting situation as well, Shane, when you consider it's been nearly 2 months since they were knocked out of the championship,
yeah.
And Micheál appeared with off the ball at the Galway races and was talking seemingly about getting next year ready in terms of the team. And like, obviously the reason that's kind of been given around is family commitments and time commitments and so on. It would seem to me very unusual. I'm sure this is where the speculation is going to come, whether there's more to this or not, that you wouldn't have known that those time expectations were there 50 days ago.
By all accounts, there seems to be a little more to it.
Yeah,
and
we
all know the financial issues that the Galway County Board have had as well in the last, well, I don't know, last decade probably.
Who'll replace him?
I think Jeffrey Linsky will replace him. I'd be surprised if he didn't, given his underage pedigree.
Three minors in four years. Under-20s limped out at the Leinster semi-final this year.
They kind of had a very weird campaign in the way the championship was set up for Galway as well. They didn't get to play around Robin, so it's hard to judge in one game.
I ran into Matty Kenny yesterday and I said, congrats on the Galway job. He had a good laugh.
It's a mad scenario that he's in. Like, he'd take her, like, that's his dream job. There's no point in saying any different. And he was beaten to the post by Micheál at the end of 2015. And it's just weird, the scenario, if Pat Gilroy was still Dublin boss, then I'm sure Matty Kenny would probably be the leading candidate for the Galway job, but you know what I mean?
Yeah, I just don't know how it would pan out. As well, quick word, like Davy Fitzgerald has even been mentioned in this, I'm not sure how that would work out. Quick word, we didn't talk about it last week, Joe O'Connor has left the Limerick setup as well, you know, the famed S&C coach was with Clare as well, that's a big one. Final thing before we go, under-20 final this weekend, Tip and Cork on Saturday, how do we see that going?
I think it's the opposite of last year. Cork
won Munster and lost the All-Ireland.
Yeah, I think Cork are a serious outfit. And plus Tipperary are coming in a different sense. Obviously coming in on cloud nine after the senior win and after hitting 8 goals against Wexford. But they could get a bit of a culture shock like a few minutes into the game when they realise like Cork are a serious, serious outfit. And have the forwards that can really damage them. So I think Cork will win by probably a score or two. But imagine like Tip going into the winter. Imagine how unbearable it would be going into the winter if I had two All-Irelands in 6 days.
Great.
Well, hopefully it's as good as the Munster final. I mean, I'd imagine for the Tipperary lads who were involved, and some of them came on and made an impression in the second half last weekend as well. It's probably been a very disjointed week preparing for another All-Ireland final when you've had the homecomings and the cup going around and so on. It has to be difficult for anyone to try and focus, especially when you're 19 or 20, to try and focus so quickly. But I'd be happy if it's as good as the Munster final. I think Tip could well edge it, but I think this is going to be a really, really close one.
Amazing how the wheel turns. Like Tipperary all of a sudden, they played very few under 21s from last year. They're going to have a load of them next year, and they all were brilliant off the bench. They still have the bulk of the senior team, obviously, won't be there again next year. They're going to have possibly an under 20 All Ireland winning team as well.
And you know that's great for Liam Cahill as well, because it would be an under 21 in the following year, an under 20 if he manages to do it. For his Dennis Ring, I think he's under pressure to get it done. Like, because he's had a couple of losses in finals, and I think he'll want this.
There seems to be pressure in the county that they need an underage title. Even Patrick Horgan said, hopefully we'll get this. Like, he just like, we need an underage title.
That's another season done.
Mad,
season 2 of the Hurling Show.
Yeah.
Brilliant stuff from Will O'Callaghan. Thank you very much, Michael Verney, the Irish Independent. Yeah. That's it. We're done with the Hurling Show in 2019. We'll be back in 2020. We're going to play you out with Tommy Walsh's pre-game monologue from the All-Ireland Final. We'll see you again next year.
Grant me, O Lord, a hurler's skill with strength of arm and speed of limb.
Here we go, the ball is in and we're underway in 2019 in the All-Ireland Final.
Unerring eye for the flying ball and courage to match whate'er befall.
Barrett's caught and Barrett's down and Richie Hogan could be in trouble here. Richie Hogan has been sent off.
May my stroke be steady and my aim be true. My actions manly and my misses few.
Niall O'Mara coming through the middle. Niall O'Mara goes for goal.
Yeah!
Fired at home. Sheehan, and Sheedy roars, Tip roar, we're back in business here.
Burton off his hurl to four. Lovely touch by McGrath. It breaks to Cullinan.
This is the new man coming onto the ball, which is Billy Ryan. Oh, the shot came towards goal. Was it Walter fired it?
Yeah.
Walter Walsh has sent it in and over the bar. We're in for some second half. 2-11 Tipperary, 13 points Kilkenny.
Bubbles Dwyer heading for the Cusack stand. He lets fly. That's absolutely incredible.
Jamie Callan sprinting onto it. Gathers that ball. Taken and he's mad. He goes by one way or the other. It's Callan coming in. Callan cross field. Yes! It's in the back of the net. It's fired in. And the ball is finished by the ball. And the Bubbles buried it. It's now 3-12 to 13 points, 42 at the clock. Tip are taking advantage here.
No matter what way the game may go, may I rest in friendship with every foe. When the final whistle for me has blown, and I stand at last before God's judgment throne, may the great referee, when he calls my name, say you heard like a man, you played the game.
Feeling. This is just incredible. Just incredible. It's everything we fucking dreamed of. Everything we dreamed of.
The Hurling Show. This is OTB Sports Radio.